It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's Meat Trapper time. Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Meat Trapper Radio. Now I've got an interesting show topic tonight, at least I find it interesting, and that is I want to talk about these survival shows, specifically the show that's on called Alone. Now I think we're on season number 3, and if you haven't seen the show, what it is they take 10 survival types, and they take them out to a remote area, whether it be British Columbia, or I think they're in Patagonia on this season. They're allowed to take 10 items, 10 survival items with them, and then they have to stay out as long as possible, and the last man to remain standing, to remain in the woods, wins $500,000. And it's a really good show. I've enjoyed watching it. My wife even will watch it with me. And what I think is fascinating about it is not so much any survival techniques or anything like that, any instructional techniques, but it's the psychological aspect of watching the different people and the different personality types and how they react to being alone for an extended period of time and how they react to success and failure and hardship and all of that sort of thing. To me, it's just fascinating. And of course, it's interesting to place your bets on who you think's going to win or who you think's going to be the first to tap out and all of that. But you know, after the second season, I remarked to my wife, I made the statement, I said, you know, this really is not so much a survival contest as it's a slow starvation contest. And what you notice over a season of watching this is that people lose massive amounts of weight when they're doing this. They're losing a lot of weight, and by the time it gets down to the last man or two, they're on their 55th day, their 60th day, something like that. They've been out for 2 months. They're literally laying in their shelter all day, just trying to stay alive. And at the end of last season, it really got painful to watch as you were really just watching people starve. That's what it really amounted to. Nobody was really catching enough stuff or finding enough stuff to eat to live long term. And of course, they all go out there with the idea of, you know, I'm going out with the idea of living for a year, being able to just, you know, not survive, but to live and to thrive. And you can see that they have certain aspects of this mentality down, in that as the seasons have progressed, they've gone to larger and larger wood-cutting tools, for instance. Instead of, using a survival knife, now you have people bringing big cross-cut saws as their cutting implement. And there are some rules on the show. You can't bring steel traps. You know, they can't bring, you know, a conibear or a leg hold trap or anything like that. And so when it gets down into the trapping aspect, it's all the primitive stuff, the deadfalls and, you know, all of the primitive type of traps. And Clint on Trapping Radio has spoken at length on why primitive traps are not the answer. And just to recap what he was talking about on a much earlier Trapping Radio show. For instance, when you do a deadfall trap, one of the general rules of thumb is you need a deadfall that's 5 times as heavy as the animal that you're attempting to trap. Now, on this Alone show, there was a guy, Sam, who spent a lot of time trying to trap a mouse, and he finally was able to trap a mouse. But, you know, he ended up expending many, many times more calories on building and setting the trap than he did on harvesting the mouse that he eventually caught. Now, if you go with the 5-to-1 ratio of deadfall to animal, it's not hard to find, you know, a 5-pound rock to make a deadfall of that will kill a mouse. But if you're going to kill an animal of any size, you know, if you're going to kill a 40-pound beaver, well, then what you're talking about suddenly is a 200-pound deadfall. And that's a completely different can of worms than most of the, you know, internet survival gurus illustrate with a figure four trap or anything like that. The other thing about primitive traps is, compared to a modern steel trap, you really have to have a lot of them out. And there have been studies done where they went back and looked at the Indians setting primitive snares, and the figure that I heard bandied about was 300 traps per person. Now think about that. The traps were so inefficient that you had to make up for that lack of efficiency with a huge number of sets. So for a variety of reasons, you know, primitive trapping is not a real answer to a long-term survival situation. And of course, that's why man developed modern traps. But recently, I came across a YouTube channel that I want to highly, highly recommend that everyone listening to this go and subscribe to. The guy is up in Canada, and the name of the channel is The Wooded Beardsman. Not The Bearded Woodsman, The Wooded Beardsman. And that always throws me. He did a great job of getting me confused when I try and say that every time. But the guy, he lives up in Canada, but he has a video on his channel, and let's see, the name of the video is called The Truth About Wilderness Survival, No Better Than Fasting. This is an extremely important video for people to watch and understand and internalize. Now, on a previous episode of Meat Trapper Radio, I talked about fasting and about doing a 3-day fast and doing that in response to training yourself to both mentally and physically to endure a 3-day lost in the woods scenario and not having to worry about food. And if you haven't listened to that episode, you might want to go back and give it a listen. But it all ties in with what we're talking about here, these survival shows. And this gentleman, the Wooded Beardsman, he does, his video is about 30 minutes long, and it's a very factually based. He cites references, he provides links to papers, and all of that. And he provides all of those links to back up what he is saying. So in this video, what the gentleman basically does is he talks about how many calories a person will burn in a day, an active man would burn in a woods scenario in a day. And then he goes through and he cites facts and figures about how much food of each type of animal or plant you would need to consume in order to fill your caloric needs. Now, on this particular show alone, after each season, you can go back and you can see how much weight each contestant lost. And these people are losing anywhere from a 0.5 pound to a 1 pound of body weight per day. They're burning the fat that they've already used. And what the Wooded Beardsman's premise is that it's not so much a survival show as a fasting show, and the people that have the more fat accumulated on their body have a better chance of lasting longer and winning the show. And, you know, if you assume a base rate of 3,300 calories a day as to what a man would need to consume in order to keep his body weight when he's in an outdoors active situation. Now, of course, there are variations. You have smaller women that go on the show, they're not going to have as high a caloric need as a larger man. But you got to pick a number. You know, you got to pick a number and you got to go with something. And so he picks 3,300 calories as a base rate. Now, what he then does is he goes and he cites an essay that was done by Ross Gilmore, who's sort of an internet survival guy, and it's called The Delusions of Living Off the Land. And what Ross did is he looked at various wild edibles and various types of animals and how much calories each one provides. And what Ross found was that wild edibles are not the answer. You simply cannot go out and find enough wild plants and eat enough wild plants in one day to put 3,300 calories in your body. It ain't going to happen. You know, that's why cows have multiple stomachs, and that's because they have to eat so much bulk in order to get the calories they need. And Ross concluded, of course, that meat was the answer. And as trappers, we know that. We know meat and fat is the answer, not flowers. Okay. But what I found interesting in the video that the gentleman did is the exact numbers of animals. And so what I'd like to do is just relay a few of his findings here. And when it came to squirrels, and these are general calculations. Some squirrels are going to be bigger than others, and I know all of that. But if you just ate the meat from the squirrels, you would need 25 squirrels per day. Think about that. Now, if you fully consume the squirrels, you're going to consume the organs and the brains and everything. Then that cuts the number down to roughly 16 squirrels per day. Now, on recent episodes of Trapping Radio and Meat Trapper Radio here on this website, we've talked a lot about bone broth. I've talked at length about harvesting the internal organs of the animals that we trap. And you see how this is all fitting together. You can see how by consuming all of the animal, you need less of them. And that really is just common sense. And then he moves on to rabbits, and you would need 3 rabbits per day to get the 3,300 calories. On that show, you see him picking up limpets and different type of clams and things like that. So to get your 3,300 calories, you'd need 320 clams per day. So you can see these are pretty unobtainable values to hit day after day after day. Now, here's where the interesting part comes in. When you start getting up into the larger animals, the type of animals that a trapper with modern traps can harvest, all of a sudden, the situation changes dramatically. For instance, if you were to catch a 25-pound coon, that's going to provide enough calories for 3.5 days, one coon. Now, anybody that's trapped coons knows exactly how much fat is on a coon. And personally, I think that a 25-pound coon would provide you a lot more than 10,000 calories, especially if you rendered the fat, because I don't think that they've gone into great detail on all of this. Now, if you look at a deer, and you assume that you get 70 pounds of raw meat off of a deer, that's going to provide calories for 21 days. So you're up to almost a month, and that's for the deer. And once again, a deer can be heavier, a deer can be lighter, but a deer is going to have a lot of internal organs that you can consume. It's also going to have fat. You're going to get the marrow from the bones. And so I would, in my personal opinion, I would bump that up. And I would have no problem saying that a good-sized, full-grown deer would provide calories for a man for a month. Now think about that, because you go from having to catch 25 squirrels a day to 4 coons, or let's see, 10 coons a month. That's a huge difference there. Just about anybody that has any experience trapping, if you're in an area where there are raccoons, you can catch 10 coons a month. Now think about a single aircraft cable snare, a modern snare. If you catch a deer, one snare feeds you for 1 month. Think about it. This is why modern traps are so efficient and so effective. Now, I provide my family's red meat exclusively from beaver. And I was corresponding with the Wooded Beardsman about that, because I get the idea that he's a very, very experienced outdoorsman, but he's not a trapper. And hopefully we can change that. Hopefully we can get him out on the trap line. But I was explaining to him that I normally harvest about 50 beaver a year for my family's red meat needs. Not poultry, not pork, but red meat. And I explained to him that I use a baseline of about 5 pounds of boned-out meat from an average beaver. Some are more, some are less. But at 5 pounds per beaver times 50 beavers, that's 250 pounds of meat per year. And for 3 individuals, when I patty it up and make it into burgers, if I assume each patty is 1/3 of a pound of meat, I can feed 3 people off of that 1 pound, or at least provide their meat portion for the night. And so that comes out to about 250 meal nights per year for my family. And that leaves roughly 100 other nights that need to be fulfilled by poultry, fish, pork, or whatever. But as you can see, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of food. It takes a lot of calories. Now, the other thing that really jumped out at me by listening to his video and reading the sources that he cites was how critical fats are. And, of course, we all know that. You know, Clint has talked about the Weston A. Price Foundation. We've talked about doing bone marrow and all of that and extracting all of the value from the animal. But fats truly are king. And one of the questions that I have got, probably the single most question that I get asked more than any other single question, is about beaver tail. Because everybody and their brother has always heard, oh, beaver tail was a delicacy, it was highly prized by the mountain men, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I did a video on cooking and eating beaver tail, and the results are exactly what you would expect, and that is the beaver tail is fat. It's the fat store of the beaver. It's pure white fat. And it really had no flavor. It was just pure fat. And after cooking it, when I took a bite of it, it's sort of like taking a bite of lard. Now, to me, that was not a pleasant experience, because I'm a modern American and I have too much fat. I have too much fat on my body. I have too much fat in my diet, and everything else. Too much of the bad fats and not enough of the good fats. But flip that around. If I were out in the woods and I were trying desperately to get my 3,300 calories per day, and I had plants and I had limpets or clams and a mice, a mouse here and there, if I had a beaver tail that was solid fat, that truly would be manna from heaven. I mean, that would be the nectar of the gods. It would not only taste wonderful to me, but it would be life-sustaining and life-saving. And that's why the beaver tail has the reputation that it does as a delicacy or highly sought after. I mean, if you were a mountain man and you were out there starving to death, you're damn right it would be highly sought after. But in modern-day situations, not so much. So, leading into that, I've spent the last year working on a video series that I'm calling resistance trapping. And the premise of resistance trapping is, what if the political situation in this country deteriorated for whatever reason, and you were forced into the woods long term under adverse circumstances, and you had to feed yourself and your compatriots? How would you do that? Because there are a lot of people in the militia movement. They're all about their AR-15s and their training and their small unit tactics, and they've got all of that down. But what none of them ever address is food. It's very simple. You're going to need food the very first day you step into the woods. You may not need a weapon for quite a while, but you're going to need food every single day. And none of those people ever address that aspect. And so I've spent a year in all conditions from 100 degrees to below freezing, filming and documenting a method of feeding yourself with modern traps. In fact, my premise is a single trap. Now, I've still got a few segments to shoot, and I've got a lot of editing to do, and I haven't decided how I'm going to put this out, how I'm going to market it. I'm still thinking all of that through. But the trap that I chose, and I want to share this with you, is a long spring trap, either a number 2 or a number 3 size, depending upon your latitude. And one of the segments that I shot, I go into great detail and I explain why I would not take a body grip trap and why I would not take a coil spring trap for long-term situations. To me, the long spring is the obvious choice. The long spring trap continues to work and continues to hold even when the springs of the trap get weak, whereas the coil spring trap is dependent upon the strength of the springs for its holding power. The body grip trap, you're going to have to be able to fabricate and replace triggers on a regular basis. Remember, in a long-term situation, you're going to be using that trap 365 days a year, when it's 100 degrees as well as when it's below freezing. So unless you have a lifetime supply of triggers for your body grip and the tools out there to fabricate triggers, you're going to be out of luck pretty quick. And in addition to the long spring trap, the way I have it set up in my video series is with number 2 American chain and with an extra large ring on the end. And that way I can tie off to trees, I can tie off to toggles, all of that sort of thing. But anyway, that would be my choice for a trap for a long-term extended survival situation. Now, the last thing I'd like to talk about is the one tool that the people on the Alone Show can and do take with them that provides the vast majority of their food, and that is the gill net. The evil gill net, you know. They can take one, and they do take one, and I've watched this very carefully. None of them know how to employ it properly. And number 2, I've only seen one contestant take what I consider to be a professional model gill net instead of just the usual typical Rambo survival wannabe piece of netting that you wad up and put in your pocket. Now, there are many different types of gill nets, and I cover this on resistance trapping, but a trammel net is probably the best type of gill net to carry, but it's like a three-wall net, and it not only will gill a fish, it'll pocket a fish up. Those can be heavy, and they can be expensive, and if you were trying to travel fast and light, that may be too big and too bulky. Personally, my gill net that I have is one that I had custom made for me, because you can have nets made And so mine is a 50-foot long net. It's the mesh is a 2.5-inch mesh because I'm not trying to catch minnows. I'm trying to catch fish. And the net is made. It's custom made. It has a float rope on the top for the top line, and it has a lead core rope on the bottom. And I consider those things to be very important. The float rope will suspend the net along the top. The lead-lined or lead core net makes sure that it hangs down in the water properly. It'll withstand a little bit of current without rolling up like an unweighted net does. And by using float ropes and lead lines on the top and the bottom, you don't get a scalloped effect, and it just works real well. But once again, the proper type of gear and being able to use a trap, which a net is just a water trap, really, that's critical in collecting enough food to survive. And I really believe that if you had a long spring trap in addition to a professional gill net, all of a sudden the equation changes immediately. Now, you'd have to adjust it on where you're at, the animals that you're at, and all of that. But that combined with a cache of snares, and to use the snares sparingly, because a snare is a one-shot deal, one catch, and it's done. But if you used it right, you wouldn't have to have a whole lot of snares. So, anyway, I'm going to put a link to the Wooded Beardsman's channel and his video in the show notes below, and I would encourage each and every one of you who are interested in this type of thinking or in this subject to check it out, because he also does a series of videos called Beyond Survival where he actually goes out and puts his ideas to the test, and I think it's fascinating viewing, and it's far better than 99% of anything that's on the idiot box these days. And so I'd encourage everyone to check it out. But I hope this has been useful and thought-provoking, and I appreciate each and every one of your time, and I hope every one of you has a healthy, prosperous, and wonderful 2017. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
But you knew that when you laid down. I'm a picture of ugly stories. I'm a killer and I'm a clown. Step into the street by sundown. Step into your last goodbye. You're a target just by living. $20 will make you die. I'll wear lace and I wear black leather. My hands are lightning up on my gun. My shots are clean. My shots are final. My shots are deadly, and when it's done